NPR is supported by Craigens Resort and the Legacy Courses in Brainerd, dedicated to making friends and memories since 1940. Gatherings, getaways, retreats, and outings. 800 Craigens.
Good morning. Welcome to Mid-Morning. I'm Catherine Lanfer. We're into week three of the presidential election, and today all of the attention is focused on the Florida Supreme Court, where lawyers for both the Bush and the Gore campaigns will give their answers to these questions. Should the manual recounts of votes in Florida continue? And should those votes count toward the final presidential tally? Well, as you might expect, the Bush campaign says no. The Gore campaign argues yes. Oral arguments begin at 1 p.m. today at the Florida Supreme Court. Now, those recounts have become even more important for Vice President Al Gore. He now has a bigger margin to beat. The absentee ballots in Florida were counted on Saturday, and they gave Governor George W. Bush an increase in his lead from 300 votes to 930. While the legal maneuvering continues, there's another question going on in the court of public opinion. When will this be over? We'll ask you, but first we're going to turn to Mike Martinez. He's a professor of political science at the University of Florida. Thanks for joining us this morning. Let's try that again, Professor. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me. How are you?
Okay. Now, we know you're not an attorney, but could you just kind of give us a brief summary of what's going to happen today at the Supreme Court? What exactly are they arguing?
Today's arguments involve an appeal by the Democrats of the circuit court decision that was handed down on Friday. In that decision, the circuit court judge in Tallahassee ruled that the Secretary of State was within her authority to use her discretion to in effect shut down the manual counts, to say that they would not be included in the final state certification. The Democrats, the Gore campaign, is appealing that decision. And the argument before the court is whether the Secretary of State, Catherine Harris, has the authority by herself to enforce the specified certification date in the law. The Democrats argue that the law actually conflicts, that part of the law actually conflicts with another part of the law, which allows for counties to embark on manual recounts. And their argument is that these two laws within Florida conflict, that you can't authorize counties to do manual recounts and not give them the resources, in effect the time, that they need to do it before the state certification. So that is the precise question before the Supreme Court today. The Republicans, in addition to that, argue that if we do manual recounts in only predominantly Democratic counties, that in effect violates the civil rights of voters in predominantly Republican counties because manual recounts are not being done there.
Well, now, but that wouldn't a Democrat then argue that the Republicans had plenty of times to request those recounts?
Sure. That's probably what the Democrats would argue, that the Republicans had plenty of time to request those recounts. The Republicans would say to that, I think, that they had no incentive to, or they had no cause to request the recounts in those counties while their candidate was ahead in the what was then the official results. So the other argument that the Democrats would make is that they have, in effect, by Vice President Gore's statement last week, they've in fact offered to agree to a statewide manual recount of votes.
Now, is this the beginning of the end, this hearing today? Does this mean we can look forward to some sort of decision that will lead us to an outcome?
I think it is the beginning of the end, but I don't think we're quite there yet.
There
are a couple of other issues that are brewing in the lower courts in Florida. Most of us, we've cut with the talk about the manual recounts. The talk about the butterfly ballot in Palm Beach County is moved off of page one onto page two. There is a hearing today in Palm Beach County by a circuit court judge there to determine whether that well, actually not to determine whether that ballot was legal, but to determine whether if it is illegal, and he's not made that determination yet, but if it is illegal, whether there's anything he can do anything about it post-election. And so that hearing is going on in Palm Beach County. There is another court battle which has sprung up in Seminole County involving absentee ballots, and these aren't just military or overseas absentee ballots. These are absentee ballots generally, in which the Democrats charged that the supervisor of elections there was making it too easy for Republican Party officials to help correct mistakes of voters who had requested absentee ballots. The specific state mistake that was involved, as I understand it, was that people did not put their voter registration number on their request. That's actually kind of, I think that's actually kind of a bad suit. I think that there aren't too many of us. There are a few of us, myself included, who carry their voter registration card around in their wallet, but they're not that many people. And so knowing what one's voter registration number is actually kind of a hard thing to do, and so I think that's actually kind of a bad suit. But it is brewing in Seminole County, so there are some other legal efforts that are still at the circuit court level in Florida.
Well, and I'm going to interject here because, I mean, pity the poor citizen trying to keep track of all this.
But these are important issues, and I think the point is that most citizens are still willing to give Florida time to do a fair count of its votes, as long as they've got some assurance that it's fair.
Well, I'm going to interject again because there has been the suggestion in commentaries over the weekend, at least, you know, through some of the print resources I looked at, that this might be the tipping point week in terms of how long the public is willing to put up with this. And, in fact, some analysts have pointed out that the legal maneuvering is so complicated and so intense that it's hard to keep track of it. And so many citizens are sort of checking out and saying, look, just finish this.
Well, I think what needs to happen in order for people to think that there's a fair outcome and that we're going to get to an outcome is really for the Florida Supreme Court to take control of this case. And I think their action on Friday was basically that we are going to basically take control of this case.
Let's revisit Friday briefly, because there was a circuit court ruling in the morning saying that Catherine Harris did have the discretion, and then the Supreme Court stepped in. What did they say?
The Supreme Court basically said, wait a minute. They said that they were going to accept the appeal by the Democrats of the circuit court decision that said that Catherine Harris had exercised her discretion in an appropriate way. They were going to accept that appeal, and then beyond that, on their own motion, in other words, without the Democrats or the Republicans asking for it, they enjoined the Secretary of State from certifying the official results on Saturday, as she had planned to do after the overseas absentee ballots were counted. So Florida does not have any certified results yet of the presidential election.
How does the Supreme Court take control of this election today? How did they help bring it to an outcome?
I think what they do today is they could do any number of things. Sort of the extreme cases were if they decided in favor of the Secretary of State, said that she exercised her authority, they could then lift their prohibition on her certifying the results and allow her to go ahead and certify the results, and George Bush would get the Republican electoral votes from Florida. That's one way that they could do it. And there is a good legal argument to be made. I'm not saying that it's a convincing one for them, but there is a good legal argument to be made, and that is the legal argument that was made before the circuit court in Tallahassee. That is that as long as the Secretary of State did not exercise her authority in an arbitrary way, as long as she used some reasoned judgment, and that was the word of the court in Tallahassee, that she had the constitutional authority under Florida law to certify the election results. So that's one way that they could take control of it. If they wanted to decide the other way, if they found, for example, that the law allowing the Secretary of State to specify to enforce the certification date and the law authorizing manual recounts collided, and they wanted to decide on the basis of the manual recounts, what they could do to take control of the case is to say, okay, we're going to do the manual recounts in whatever counties they decide, whether it's the three counties in South Florida or statewide, and say what the rules were for counting the votes there, because as has been widely reported, they are different in different counties, and it goes to the question of, do you count one-cornered chads or two-cornered chads or dimples or pregnant chads or whatever. They could set statewide standards about how to count those ballots in those in the counties that use punch cards.
We're talking to Mike Martinez. He's a professor of political science at the University of Florida. We're talking to him about the latest developments as we enter into week three of this presidential election. If you have your own question, observation, or insight, give us a call, 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. Do you think that the Florida Supreme Court will be able to shape the outcome of this election? Do you think they can at least bring it to some sort of end? We'd like to know what you think. 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Now, Professor, there is some talk that if the recounts continue and if they truly are going to be fair, we could be into this through early December.
Yeah, we could. Miami is the largest county in the Miami-Dade is the largest county in the state, and they said it's going to take a lot of time in order to do the recounts there. I think in Miami, though, they've tried to they've tried to do this in an expedited way, or what their plan is to do this in an expedited way. That is, first sort out the ballots that did not report, according to the machine count, did not report any presidential vote, because those are the votes in which you're most likely to get a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
That if a vote was, and most votes were clearly marked for one of the presidential candidates, and if the machine counts that as a clear mark for one of the presidential candidates, the probability is there, but it's very, very small, that that was actually a misreported ballot. So what they want to do is focus on the ballots which the machine count did not register a vote for a presidential candidate, and that will help to expedite their count if they are allowed to do that.
You know, there's been a lot more reporting on the punch hole ballot and how inaccurate it often is. I believe that there was even, I'm trying to think, it might have been Massachusetts where they had a disputed election and the Secretary of State simply banned the use of that type of ballot, knowing that we have that there seem to be irregularities if you do hand counting, there's irregularities if you do machine counting. What does that say about the system of voting we have?
Well, one must understand that I don't know what it's like in all states, but in Florida, the decision about what kind of accounting system to use, what kind of voting system to use, is left to the county. So we have several counties, including the county that I vote in, has an optical scanning thing, so any students who have taken multiple choice tests know how to vote on those kinds of systems, and those actually have a much appear to have a much lower underreport for president. In other words, the numbers of ballots or the percentage of ballots that actually don't read any votes for president is actually much lower than in the punch card systems, and one would imagine that's because the punch card systems are not actually reading all of the votes accurately, and so they're coming up with no votes there. So that decision is actually left to the counties. I think where we are is that we've got a country and in my particular case a state that is pretty evenly divided. And not even divided, more than conflicted, but both parties are very competitive, and this election is showing that we've got some antiquated systems that probably already there was talk in the Florida legislature, already there's talk in Congress about allocating some money to allow counties to move into maybe the 20th century, and if we're lucky, the 21st century, in their voting systems and their voting calculations. So we've got an old system that is, that's a grinding system that has worked for a long time, partly because elections have not been this close. And the ones that were this close were for lower-level offices that didn't have quite the significance as it does nationally, as in this case. But what we've run into is a situation where we've got these antiquated systems that have errors in counting that show up in a very important, in the most important election that we can imagine, and that is for President of the United States.
Let's go to Rob in Minneapolis. Rob, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Morning.
Hi.
I actually had a comment, Catherine, in regard to the professor's earlier comments about the fact that he felt like the public was willing to wait longer for a fair vote, so to speak. And I would have to disagree with that.
All right. Can you give us a reason why? Is it?
Yeah, I think just kind of the water cooler talk. I really think that people are going to see whatever the outcome is. It's not going to be fair, whoever wins, just because of everything that's gone on already. And at this point, I think that people just want the thing to end and the country to move forward. And whether or not there's election reform or election reform to be done is a different matter. But I think that neither party right now is being viewed favorably by the public.
Now, I have to tell you, there was an analysis piece in the New York Times over the weekend by Robin Toner, in which it was reported that just from interviewing people around the country, there was a sense of people saying, eh, forget about it. At this point, either one of them's fine. Is that what you're telling me you're hearing?
That's pretty much what I'm hearing, yes.
Okay.
And I think that the fact that neither of the two major party candidates was able to receive any kind of a majority kind of backs that up.
Okay. Rob, let's turn to the professor.
Well, as you mentioned, there is possibly a tipping point that's coming soon. I don't think we're quite there yet. There are a number of people, including the people around Rob's water cooler, who probably have moved that direction. The polls that I have seen still say that the public is willing to wait some undetermined amount of time. Now, that may be a week, but I think when the Supreme Court gives us, and in this case the Florida Supreme Court, gives us some direction, gives us some assurance, and in fact they've kind of taken hold of this case one way or another, that the public will look at that if they deem that to be a fair decision, and allow the state to work according to the Supreme Court's decision.
Let's go to Dave in Roseville. Dave, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Morning. Just a comment, and the comment is it's very disappointing to see the lack of statesmanship by both parties at this point. And I'm a Democrat, but I'm disappointed by both parties. And I think that disinformation has to stop, and everybody's got to abide by what the law is. And we have to understand that partisans are going to make decisions under the law, whether it's the Secretary of State or the Supreme Court. And everybody's just kind of got to step back and let the process of the law unfold. And I'm willing to accept that process, no matter who is eventually elected. But I think this kind of propaganda that people are putting out on both sides is just nothing but harmful. It's like throwing gasoline on a fire.
All right, Dave, thank you. Professor?
Well, I think, there are a lot of people in the country, even before the election, were kind of upset with the apparent partisanship of what goes on in Washington, that people are fighting one another. I think probably what that is a result from is that many voters kind of in the middle who don't agree wholeheartedly with a Republican agenda and don't agree wholeheartedly with a Democratic agenda will vote for a Republican Congress and a Democratic president or vice versa, hoping that they'll be able, that the conflict between those two, they'll force them to work things out. But as a result, what we get is this intense partisanship at the elite level, and that's what's playing out here. I think the caller has made a significant point here about just sort of letting the law play out. The problem with that is, in Florida, we're not quite sure what the law is. As he noted, the lawyers on both sides have their own interpretation of what the law is. The Democrats are saying that the law in Florida allows for these manual recounts, and therefore they should go forward. The Republicans are saying that, no, it doesn't, that it gives the Secretary of State the authority to make her decision on Tuesday of last week to certify the results after the overseas ballots are counted. We're not quite sure what the law is, and I think, unfortunately, what this has done for us in Florida is show us a variety of holes that we have in our election law. Like, what does get counted in a recount?
Mm-hmm.
Who makes those decisions in a statewide race? The authority to give the county canvassing boards the decision to initiate a manual recount makes sense in a local election, but does it make sense in a statewide election where three counties can decide on their own to embark on manual recount? So, and the other thing then obviously is, in counting overseas ballots, what do you do when a ballot comes in without a postmark? Through no fault of the voter, either an Army post office or a foreign post office doesn't put a postmark on it or puts an illegible postmark on it, we need to have some mechanism to decide whether to count those votes. And unfortunately, Florida law has been shown to be ambiguous here. So that's why I keep coming back to the Supreme Court needs to come take hold of this and tell us how we're going to decide this. And I think once they do, and once they resolve those ambiguities in the Florida law that exists now, then we'll be on the starting point to a resolution here.
Let's go to Phil in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning. A couple of comments. First, in my work, I deal, am exposed to Supreme Court rulings on land use and zoning cases. And there, the Supreme Courts, both in states and the federal Supreme Court, are reluctant to impose their own judgment over local officials. Rather, they're looking for some good reason. It may not be the reason that any court or some other group might arrive at looking at the same facts, but what they really get upset about and put their fingers into is when there is no good reason given. So I'm inclined to think that Ms. Harris' decision might be upheld by the court, and I'd like the comments on that. Second, the Republicans in that race have claimed that recounting by hand some of the Democratic counties is unfair because it takes away the civil rights of the other more Republican counties, and yet at the same time they're arguing that the hand recount is inaccurate and open to mischief. So I'm wondering what rights are actually being taken away, and I wonder if the professor could comment on that apparent contradiction.
All right, thank you.
Let me talk about the second thing first, is that, yeah, I actually do, in effect, the Republicans are arguing that the manual recounts in selected heavily Democratic counties, and Broward and Palm Beach are pretty heavily Democratic counties, they're right about that, is unfair because it's selective. But at the same time, they have not accepted the Gore campaign's proposal to go ahead and count statewide if they're concerned about the selectivity there. So I think they are concerned about the about both the accuracy and the fairness of the manual recounts. I have seen reports in the New York Times, among other places, that the manufacturers of these systems never claimed that the counting systems were 100% perfect. And in fact, one of the benefits of those systems is that the punch cards themselves are sort of leave an audit trail, or they're the hand backup to the systems, to the automatic counting of the system. On the caller's other point that judges may look for the for some reason to uphold local officials or the state or the statewide elected officials' rulings here, I think that I think that's probably right. The problem here is that you've got the county saying one thing and the Secretary of State saying another thing. The county saying that the law allows them the discretion to embark on a manual recount, and if it does that, then it has to allow them the time to do that. And the Secretary of State saying that the law allows her the discretion on whether to accept results that are reported to her after the certification deadline of last Tuesday. That's a conflict, and that's what the role of the courts is in our society, is to say when a law does conflict, when the law apparently does conflict, which takes precedence. That's the role of the court in our society, is to interpret the law and to resolve conflicts in the law. So I think, and as the caller noted, the circuit court in Tallahassee found good reason to support the Secretary of State and saying that she had exercised her discretion in a legal way. That's a heavy burden for the Democrats to prove that the Secretary of State either did not have the discretion or exercised it in an arbitrary way before the Supreme Court today. So I think they've got, they've got a couple of things that they have, a couple of arguments they need to win in the Florida Supreme Court today.
We are talking to Mike Martinez. He's a professor of political science at the University of Florida. All eyes, of course, on Florida today, this afternoon at 1 p.m. Hearing begins at the Florida State Supreme Court, where they will consider answers to these questions. Should the manual recounts going on in some Florida counties continue? And should the votes recounted there be put into the final presidential tally? The Bush campaign, of course, is arguing no, and the Gore campaign is arguing yes. We'd like to know what you make of these manual recounts. Should they be continuing? Let us know, 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. We're also curious to know how you see the public patience holding on. Do you think the nation is ready to let this go on a bit longer, or is it time for this to start wrapping up? Is this week the tipping point? Let us know. It's 1-800-242-2828 in the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000. Now, one of those lines might be full right now, but just take that number down and try us in a few minutes. Again, you're listening to Mid-Morning. I'm Catherine Lanford. We're going to turn to Greta Cunningham. She's standing by with the latest from the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.
Thanks, Catherine, and good morning. As you've been discussing this morning, a historic court hearing in Florida today could settle the presidential race. The state Supreme Court hears 2 hours of oral arguments on whether hand-counted ballots now being tallied should be accepted or ignored. Al Gore's attorneys will be trying to get the court to force the hand recounts of ballots to be included in the state's vote totals. George W. Bush's side will be trying to keep them out. The arguments begin at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. A hand recount begins in Florida's Miami-Dade County this morning. Officials sorted ballots by machine yesterday to get ready for the manual recount. Meanwhile, recounts continue in Broward and Palm Beach counties. George W. Bush continues to hold on to the lead. President Clinton flew home from Vietnam early this morning, ending a historic mission to the communist country that was once America's enemy. Clinton told Vietnamese leaders that Americans wish to be your partners. It was the first visit by a U.S. president since the Vietnam War ended. Peru's president, Alberto Fujimori, says he will resign within 48 hours. Fujimori's 10-year rule had crumbled in recent months over corruption scandals. He's now in his ancestral home of Japan. In regional news, 1,700 striking workers at the Frigidaire freezer plant are going back to work after ending a strike this weekend. About 1,100 union members voted on a new contract Saturday. They turned it down, but also voted to end the strike. Union officials say the contract isn't perfect, but they admit they were pleased to see union members headed back to work. The Holly Dazzle Parade in downtown Minneapolis starts this Friday. The nightly 30-minute parade along the Nicollet Mall starts at 6:30. This year's parade includes 11 floats and numerous marching bands and singing groups. 30 parades are scheduled between Friday and December 23rd, plus a post-Christmas parade on December 26th. There will be no parades on December 24th and 25th. And that's a look at the latest news.
Support for this programming comes from the members of Minnesota Public Radio. Thank you.
Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by the Science Museum of Minnesota, featuring a T-Rex named Sue, the world's largest T-Rex fossil, here for limited engagement.
It has been a long and winding road, this search for a new president of the United States. And coming up on Monday's midday, we will have all the latest on the continuing saga of who's going to be the next president of the United States. I'm Gary Ikton. I hope you can join us. Midday, 11 to 1 weekdays here on Minnesota Public Radio, KNOW-FM 91.1 in the Twin Cities.
I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning. We're continuing our conversation about how we're entering week three of the presidential election. All eyes on Florida today. Arguments begin at 1 p.m. today at the Florida State Supreme Court. They'll answer the question, should the recounts go on in some Florida counties? Should those votes count in the final presidential tally? How would you answer that question? 1-800-242-2828 in the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000. We're continuing our conversation with Mike Martinez. He's a professor of political science at the University of Florida. Before we go to the calls, Professor Martinez, we haven't talked much about the fact that most of those Supreme Court justices are Democratic appointees. How does that affect both the decision and how it's received?
I don't know how it's going to affect the decision. We might find out this afternoon or tomorrow how it's going to affect the decision. As you mentioned, most of them are Democratic appointees, and six of them, in fact. And one of them was actually a joint appointment by our late Governor Lawton Childs and our current Governor Jeb Bush, who is a Republican. And one of Child's appointees was an independent. So the current makeup of the court is six Democrats and one independent. I don't know. The circuit judge in Tallahassee who had ruled to uphold Catherine Harris's authority to certify the election on Tuesday is in fact a Democrat. So it's not necessarily true that Democrats are going to automatically support the Gore campaign. Florida justices have this independent streak in them, and that could work to either side's advantage. They have been involved in a number of tussles with the with executive branch officers and with the legislature in recent years. So they've got an independent streak in them. I don't expect that we can know, you know, whether their partisanship is going to affect their ruling, and judge in the circuit court judge case in Tallahassee apparently didn't.
Okay.
I don't think we can know that.
Okay, let's go to Brad in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Oh, thanks for taking my call, Catherine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this discussion about hand counting of ballots seems kind of interesting in the fact that we seem to have been hand counting things for a lot longer than we've been electronic counting them. So it would strike me that an argument that says, you know, a hand count isn't appropriate would say that, well, we didn't have a democratic process up until we had computers. So, you know, from that standpoint, the issue of allowing or not allowing hand counts seems to be, I don't know, absurd in my opinion. You know, if you want to take a technologist viewpoint, if we're going forward and we think we're going to do pure electronic balloting, how does one come up with an audit? And then just another comment on your process. It seems that if the election is this close, then maybe the activities that we're going through, no matter how close the end result ends up in, is, as it takes time, people eventually resolve themselves to the fact that there is one winner, whatever that turns out to be, and you know, the company or the country can move forward a lot easier going forward.
All right, thanks. Any reaction, Professor?
On the I think the caller has a good point, is that for, you know, many, many years we did do hand counts. I think we didn't go to machine counts primarily because they were more accurate. I think we went to machine counts because they were faster. We got to the point that we were overwhelming our local supervisors of elections with the numbers of ballots that they had to count, and machine counts allows them to do their job faster, and then does, as the caller suggested, leave an audit if we have to go back and do the hand counts. In fact, there is one small county in Florida that still uses paper ballots, and so the only way to count those is to do them by hand. So I think that the caller is right that we are at a point where we're sort of at a crossroads of technology here. But we should probably not make the argument, I don't think, that hand counts are inherently unconstitutional. I think on a second point that eventually we will need to get one winner, that really is going to be affected, I think, by some of the major elites, our members of Congress, our governors, if the Florida Supreme Court speaks with a clear and unambiguous voice, if that is appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court or the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals in Atlanta.
I'm so glad you mentioned courts, because we've just been handled this announcement from the wires, and I need to interject so folks can know about it as soon as possible. A Palm Beach County judge ruled today that he lacks authority to order a revote in the Florida county of Palm Beach. He's stopping any sort of revote in the November 7th presidential election. Excuse me. Even though the evidence has shown that there was a confusing ballot design that cost Vice President Al Gore a large number of votes. What impact will this decision have?
I don't think that this, I think that's a hard one for the Democrats to win.
Mm-hmm.
I think if that one, or in fact, I think this suit was not filed by the Democratic Party, but by local citizens in
right.
Palm Beach County. I think that's a hard one for them to win. I think that, you know, the judge first wanted to look and see whether he had the authority to order any revote, and as you just noted, he ruled that he did not have that authority to do that. And I think that was a hard case to win. I think once votes are cast, it becomes a matter of how to count those votes rather than argue about whether the ballot or any other features of the election itself was violated certain citizens' rights, so long as there was no fraud or intent to defraud. And no one argued seriously that there was any fraud or intent to defraud in Palm Beach County. So I think that was a hard one for the Democratic voters in Palm Beach County to win. I think it'll be even harder on appeal.
Let's go to Evan in Minneapolis. Evan, welcome to Mid Morning.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I'm actually calling just when I first tuned in this morning. I think your guests were arguing a bit some differences of opinion over public opinion and whether or not basically on the sort of the secondary topic to your program as far as what the public is ready for, are they about to snap or what have you. And I guess I just feel that given that this election, the results themselves were such a clear indication that there is no singular public opinion or singular public mandate, that it's I just think it's a bit wasteful of airtime on all the networks to sort of, you know, wring their hands over, well, you know, are the people ready for this to be over, or are they not? I don't think there's any argument that at some point everyone would like to have the next president actually take his seat. But what these polls are, the extensive public opinion polling that continues to go on, I feel like is not necessarily that fruitful. And I wonder if it's actually to the campaigns themselves and trying to figure out how successful they're being in their own spin control.
Okay. Thanks. Professor?
Well, let me not waste any more time on the, public opinion aspect of that, Ben. But let me go back to the previous caller's question, because actually I think it relates to this caller's comment.
Okay.
Our previous caller had said that, you know, at some point we need to have an end game here. We need to have one of these guys, either Governor Bush or Vice President Gore, is going to be elected to the presidency. And in some ways we all want that president, whichever candidate turns out to be, to be a legitimate president. We need a president in office for all of the reasons that, you know, we learned in high school civics. And we need to have a president who has some effectiveness here. That the effectiveness of the president and the support the president gets in both public opinion and in Congress is going to depend a lot on what our leaders tell us. And that if Democrats, including Vice President Gore, but other prominent Democrats, feel like they've had a fair shake, they've had a fair hearing, that the Supreme Court has spoken, and, you know, if it turns out that Governor Bush is inaugurated as president, then they need to tell people that, you know, we gave it our best shot. There were some, you know, there were some irregularities in Florida, but nothing fraudulent that they could determine. But we need to support the president. And I think the same is true if the manual recounts go on and Gore is eventually determined to get Florida's electoral votes in the presidency. The Republicans will need to say, Republican elites will need to say, look, at, you know, it worked its way through the courts. That was what the courts determined. So I think there's a big responsibility of our leaders to, in effect, tell us whether they think this process is fair.
Let's go to Paul in St. Paul. Paul? Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hello.
Hi.
My question is, or a comment, I guess, a couple comments, is that the systems were set up with these machines to have the vote counted not by hand. The hand count, 200 years ago, made sense because the ballots were, I'm sure, a lot different than these machine ballots. And then number two, if the Democrats say that the hand count is needed because they don't trust the machine counts, that would discredit all the machine counts in the whole country that were being used, and so they're basically saying that all the machines are not the right thing to use for these counts.
All right, thanks, Paul. Professor?
I think any voting counting mechanism, whether it's hand count or machine count, has a degree of error in it, and the manufacturers of the machine counts acknowledge that there is some error even under the most perfect conditions, like they are 99.99% accurate under the most pristine conditions. Well, in a statewide race this close, then possibility that the errors in the machine counts were could have swayed the count toward one candidate or the other. Now, hand counts aren't perfect either, but by having, in a sense, the hand counts act as a backup to the machine counts, then we look at the I think we can get the best estimate of what the voters' intentions were. So, in fact, the manufacturers acknowledge that, you know, one of the advantages of the punch card systems, there are not too many advantages that we talk about these days to the punch card systems, but one of their advantages is they leave that audit. They leave that audit of the cards themselves that can be counted. I think the reason that the machine counts, this is, in a sense, a statistical fluke. Most elections are not decided by such a small margin of victory. In most elections, the electors, the voters, give a clear indication of which candidate has the support of a majority or plurality of voters. And in this election, nationwide, it was very, very close, and in Florida, it was extremely close. And so if Governor Bush had won by 10,000 votes instead of by maybe 1,000 votes, according to the current count, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation. We would still be talking about how close the election was in Florida. But in general, the larger the margin of victory, the less likely it is for any counting system to affect the outcome. In this case, we're talking about 1,000 votes, which is, I forget the fraction here, but a very small fraction of the 6 million of votes that have been cast in Florida, and so any counting system is subject to some error, and that's why the law provides for an automatic recount, and that's why the law provides for manual recounts as a backup to that.
Let's go to Greg. He's calling us from Minneapolis. Greg, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay.
I think it really doesn't matter who wins at this point in time. I mean, people are just, you know, so, I don't know, they're just so disgusted by the way both parties are acting, you know, and how they're just spending so much money and basically trying to buy the election. You know, I think it really opens up an opportunity for, you know, just an independent candidate to step in.
You have anyone in mind, Greg?
Well, I don't know. Jesse Ventura, why not?
Okay, Greg.
2004, maybe?
Pardon?
2004.
So you're putting down the first steps here for Ventura 2004 campaign.
Well, I don't think anybody wants to see this kind of thing happen again.
Well, let's turn to Professor Martinez. What do you say? Jesse in 4 years?
Jesse in 4 years. I don't know. Is Jesse going to win re-election in 2002 is my next question. I think this is a statistical fluke because of the closeness of the election. Now, the elections were close in a number of states, but the fact that the electors are sort of more or less evenly divided and that Florida makes a difference and that Florida was so close here is sort of the combination of things that make this kind of fluky. I think that there's always been in the last 20 years or so, there's been kind of a feeling of disgust with both parties that they were by some people in the middle that both parties were engaged in partisanship and how can they shut down the government and you know, can't these guys reach a compromise in the middle? And the way some voters have been approaching that is to vote for a divided government, I think. That they either consciously or unconsciously have voted to have one party in the presidency and one party in Congress. The Senate could still be 50-50. In fact, I was thinking, as I was thinking about this, this is not just Florida that's slow in counting. I'm wondering why Washington is taking so long in telling us whether they're going to have a Democratic or Republican senator. Some voters could look at this as an opportunity for an independent candidate to kind of come up the middle, as Governor Ventura did in your last gubernatorial election. But, you know, I think they faced kind of the same thing about who it's going to be. There's no organization that they have to mobilize in the ways that the Democrats and Republicans have, and they would have to find, in effect, a singular voice that they can rally behind. Ross Perot was a candidate like that in 1992, and yet he still came up very short. So there may be some opportunities for independents to come up here. I think that they are still going to face the obstacles that that many independent candidates have faced in the past. As your governor showed, those can be overcome under the right circumstances.
Talk for a minute about the Electoral College. I know there's been some talk in Florida. The Republican House Speaker there has said that, you know, the legislature might step in there and just go ahead and award the state's 25 electors to Governor Bush before the Electoral College meeting in mid-December. Now, how can that happen? How does that work?
The states must, by federal law, the states must designate who their electors are no later than December the 12th. And those electors will meet in their respective state capitals to vote on December the 18th. I think what the Speaker of the Florida House was saying is that it looks like it's not going to be resolved by December the 12th. The state legislature would take its authority on behalf of the state to appoint the electors if it's not resolved by then. I think, I'm not sure, I haven't talked to the Speaker-elect, but I think that was sort of a shot over the bow saying you've got to get this done.
Mm-hmm.
The states actually constitutionally, historically, have had the authority to name their electors. I think South Carolina was the last state to move away from the legislature actually naming the electors to having a popular vote for the electors, and that was in the early 19th century. But the states do, it is a requirement that the states must name their electors by December the 12th. If the state legislature stepped in and made it a really partisan step in naming the Republican electors, then I think that would create that would then escalate, because it would create an impression that it was unfair that the state legislature was stepping on either the authority of the courts or the authority of the local counties as supervisors to count the ballots. And that's why I think we need a pretty clear and unambiguous ruling or series of rulings from the Florida Supreme Court.
Let's go to Robert in Plymouth. Robert, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Thank you. Imagine if we were a pure democracy instead of a republic and had done away with the Electoral College, we'd be having a national recount in every polling place in the nation. How would that be?
All right, Professor?
That's one of the defenses of the Electoral College is that, as your caller implied, that we've got a very close election nationally, something like 100,000 votes nationally. And so we wouldn't only be doing recounts in Palm Beach County, but you'd be doing recounts in the Twin Cities and recounts in everywhere around the country. I think that if we move to a constitutional amendment, as Senator-elect Clinton has said that she was going to propose, to abolish the Electoral College, I think it will be incumbent on Congress to set some national standards about voting procedures and set some national standards about when recounts would then be mandated.
Talk for a minute about Bush's lead, which grew over the weekend once those absentee ballots were tabulated. He now is leading Gore by 930 votes. How likely is it now that Gore is going to be able to make up votes in that manual recount?
It got a lot harder. The overseas ballots were heavily Republican, as they were expected to be, and so now the count is just under 1,000 votes that Gore would need to make up. I think that's hard to do, and in one sense, it may be the best thing for Governor Bush in terms of achieving a legitimate result. In one sense, if the courts ruled that the counties could go ahead with their recount and Gore still came up short, in a sense, that provides the most legitimate outcome for Governor Bush. That's a risky outcome for him, because who knows? He might come up with the votes. Gore might come up with the votes in the manual recount. But in a sense, that provide the possibility of going ahead with the manual recounts and showing that Gore still didn't come up with those with the votes in the manual recounts provides the best possible outcome for Bush, but there's a risk in there.
Well, it's the least messy scenario for the country, however, isn't it?
I'm sorry?
If Bush gets enough votes in the recount?
Yeah, or if Gore doesn't get enough votes in the recount is what we're talking about now, then that would be sort of the clearest outcome. There are still some questions in Florida, the Palm Beach. It's highly unlikely that 3,000 people intended to vote for Buchanan in Palm Beach County. There were 20,000 ballots thrown out in Jacksonville, and thousands more across the state in Palm Beach, in particular for double punches, and those were attributed to confusing ballots as well. In Jacksonville, Florida, and Duval County, there was not a butterfly ballot, but a multi-page ballot for president. And many voters believed that they were told that they should vote on every page. And so by voting on the first page for a major party presidential candidate and on the second page for one of the series of minor party candidates, they invalidated their votes.
Professor, I want to try to get in one last call here very quickly. Jim and Egan, you have to be quick, I'm afraid.
Okay. I believe there's a win-win here. The Florida Supreme Court could vote in favor of the Secretary of State and also allow the manual recount to go on and ask her to consider that before she finally certifies the vote.
I don't think that's a likely outcome. I think that if they gave her the authority to certify the election results, she would certify the election results, giving Bush a 930-vote lead in Florida.
All right. In the seconds that we have remaining, what should we be looking out for today?
I think what you want to look for is for the Supreme Court. I'm not even sure they're going to make their decision today. They're supposed to hear the oral arguments today. But look for, if they do support the manual recounts, look and see whether they're going to give the county any time limits and also whether they're going to give the counties any guidelines on how to count these ambiguous votes.
All right. Professor, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Mike Martinez is a professor of political science at the University of Florida. A reminder, of course, we'll be talking more about this presidential election, asking you if perhaps Al Gore should concede. That'll be the question in the second half of mid-morning. We also want to remind you that we will be carrying live coverage of the Florida Supreme Court hearing today starting at 1 p.m. NPR's Neil Conan will anchor that. And, of course, we'll bring it to you. I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning here on Minnesota Public Radio.
Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by Care 11, host of care11.com. 24-hour access to updated weather, radar, news, and traffic information. care11.com.
I'm Kathy Werzer, regional host of Morning Edition, with an important message to everyone who called in during our membership drive last week.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Yes, thanks a lot to all of our new and renewing members. Your generous support is